Welcome to the Podcast Potables Network, part of Underground Sports Philadelphia. You are listening to Process Potables, brought to you by the Andrew Boss team at Berkshire Hathaway. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a five-star rating, and a review on Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Untappd at Process Potables. For news, info on breweries we've worked with, and more, check out www.processpotables.com. Process Potables is on tap. Cheers, everybody. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Process Potables. I am Dan, going solo on this one, but I do have a very special guest that we interviewed for this episode. His name is Max Letterman. He works for NBC Sports Boston covering the Celtics, but he is actually a Sixers fan. So really had a great conversation with Max. Very excited for everybody to hear this interview. Very special shout out to the Hive Queen, Zainab, for hooking me up and putting me in contact with Max. I reached out to her to see if she had any insight onto who would be a good get to talk about a potential Sixers-Celtics first-round matchup. And, of course, the Queen came through. So thank you, Z. Really, really appreciate it. We will get to the interview with Max in a little bit. But first, I want to start off with this week's Quick Sips. From Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer, Sixers forward Tobias Harris will help support 12 Philadelphia families with mortgage assistance, provide lunch for 250 healthcare workers, and distribute 20,000 children's books for at-home libraries in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Harris has a partnership with Read by Fourth. The books for home libraries will go to Read by Fourth, whose partners include the People's Emergency Center, the Philadelphia Housing Authority, Mastery Charter Schools, and churches. On Tuesday, he partnered with Chick-fil-A to provide lunches to healthcare workers at Temple University Hospital to thank them for working hard in the front lines of the pandemic. Temple cares for the largest number of COVID-19 patients in Philadelphia. The 27-year-old will also donate 3 months of mortgage payments for 12 families experiencing financial hardship. The families will be selected by Habitat for Humanity of Philadelphia. In regards to the NBA returning, we had news today, a lot regarding the potential comeback of the NBA. It was reported by The Athletic that Disney World in Orlando has emerged as the clear frontrunner as the location for the NBA's return this summer. However, Bucks owner Mark Lazary said on CNBC last night that when the NBA returns, it will probably be two sites. He mentioned the West being in Las Vegas and the East being in Orlando. We then had a Woj bomb from Adrian Wojnarowski and also with Zach Lowe. They were reporting together. Quote, NBA teams are expecting the league office will issue guidelines around June 1st that will allow franchises to start recalling players who've left their markets to return as a first step toward a formal ramp-up for the season's resumption. Teams also expect that around June 1st, they'll be allowed to expand workouts that are already underway with in-market players, sources tell Zach Lowe and myself. So it sounds like the NBA may be on its way back. Very excited. Obviously, we have been proponents of making sure the player safety is of the utmost importance. But, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. I'm going to be excited to get basketball back in any capacity. And in the spirit of that, I'm really excited to get to our conversation with Max from NBC Sports Boston and kind of talking about the Sixers overall. Again, Max being a Sixers fan, but also really diving in to some thoughts on a potential first-round matchup between the Sixers and the Celtics. Before we get to that, in our network news, today we dropped the first episode of Popcorn and Potables. You can find that in the Process Potables podcast feed for now. They will have their own feed. Their pod will eventually be on all platforms. Right now it is still getting uploaded to a lot of them, including Apple Podcasts, so they will reside in the Potables feed for now. but not permanently. Just trying to get some exposure, get people to see it for those who are interested, but we will get back to just having process potables in the future. Powerbombs and Potables released their newest episode this past Monday. We will also be doing a bonus episode that'll be covering the AEW pay-per-view that is this Saturday. It's Double or Nothing or All or Nothing. I don't know. I'm not the wrestling guy. One of those two. Something or Nothing. Some kind of gambling reference. But very excited to do that. Me and Corey will be on there. We might have some other friends hopping on. So make sure to stay tuned for that. That will be the last Powerbombs and Potables episode that will be in the Process Potables feed. Powerbombs and Potables has their own feed. They are on all their platforms now, and all their episodes are on there as well. So going forward, if you are interested in the Powerbombs and Potables episodes, make sure that you find their feed. That is the one we have been sharing for 2 weeks now. We're no longer sharing the one from our feed, but have left them in there just in case for the people that are interested in both that podcast and the Sixers one. So trying to make sure that you're aware of what we're bringing you, but don't want to flood any specific feed for anybody who's not looking for all the content. So appreciate everybody's patience, everybody for understanding what we're trying to do on our end, and we want to make sure that you know that at the end of the day, we want to have your best interests in mind. So trying to make sure that we're not a bother or anything at the same time. With all of that said, I will get you right into the interview with Max Letterman. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter, Max_Letterman, LEDERMAN of NBC Sports Boston. But first, a message from our sponsor, the Andrew Boss Team at Berkshire Hathaway.
Who's the next person you know who will be buying or selling a home? Have them contact the Andrew Boss Team at Berkshire Hathaway for the most trusted process when it comes to real estate in New Jersey. Call today, 856-904-5636. That's 856-904-5636. And mention Process Potables for exclusive savings.
All right, so I'm now joined by a very special guest, Max Letterman of NBC Sports Boston. You can find him on Twitter at Max_Letterman. That's LEDERMAN. Max covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston, but also happens to be a Sixers fan. So I think this is going to be a fun interview. Max, how are you doing tonight? Thank you for coming on the episode.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm feeling good about the some news starting to percolate out there. The NBA, you know, there's some dates maybe being thrown out. It seems like there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. We might get back to some basketball.
Yeah, very excited that there's potential for basketball. You know, hope they're going to be safe about it, but at least at this point, it appears June 1st is at least a date to have players get back in the town if they aren't already, start some practices, get people into their training facilities and things like that. So a light at the end of the tunnel for sure. I want to start before we get into anything with the Sixers or the Celtics, since that's where I want to take this. In regards to your Twitter bio specifically, you have that you cover the Celtics, but the Sixers are why you drink. And I just wanted to welcome you to Process Potables because I feel like this is the place for you. We are not only a Sixers podcast, but we are a beer podcast. We welcome all types of drinking, but we do generally talk about beer. Specifically for this, since we're talking the Celtics, you know, Boston in New England, I'm actually drinking a Heady Topper from The Alchemist in Vermont, which is one of the most critically acclaimed beers in the world. I believe right now it's like number 5 in the world on Beer Advocate, but it has been very difficult to get down here, and I'm guessing across most of the country. Distribution has not been their thing, but they did just start distributing throughout New Jersey, so I was able to find this locally. I'd only had maybe 3 to 4 cans in my life. I was able to buy 2 4-packs, the only two that a store by me had, and it's fantastic. Highly recommend it to anybody in the area who can get their hands on it. Max, what is your drink of choice when you need to drown your sorrows over the Sixers?
I'm usually just a bourbon guy, you know, when it's the Sixers involved, or just in general. Before quarantine, that is. Quarantine, I've kind of just... It's mostly just about the calories, so I don't care anymore. It's like, let's just get to the next day. So, you know, I've been drinking more beer lately, but, you know, I'm usually a bourbon guy. You know, I'll drink scotch too, but I go with, you know, Maker's Mark is just generally what I drink. If I'm being cheap, maybe some Wild Turkey, or even there's this really cheap bourbon called Fighting Cock. It's 103 proof and it costs $20.
I've had that.
And it comes in a glass bottle, so you don't feel like super cheap. It's not a plastic bottle. And look, it just takes you where you need to go. You don't need to worry about how it tastes.
before I actually really enjoyed whiskey and bourbon. I think one of my friends bought Fighting Cock just because it was called Fighting Cock and they thought it was funny. And we drank it and it literally, like, I wanted to die. Where, like, now I could probably stomach it very easily. But back then, I didn't have the tolerance or the acquired taste for something like that. But scotch and bourbon, very much up my alley as well. Cheap scotch, I like to go to, like, a Powers, like an Irish whiskey. Very affordable. And then bourbon, not necessarily, like, cheap, but Four Roses small batch is usually around, like, $40-$45 for the bottle, and a big fan of that. Like, I will rival that to a lot of the more expensive bourbons I've had for about half the price, if not less. So big fans of those if you're not familiar with either of them. On to the Sixers. So I'm just going to go out and say it. So full disclosure to anybody, we went like 20 minutes and I fucked the whole thing up and didn't get it. So I think we're going to be pretty fine-tuned and maybe even a little bit more on top of it than we were. So while I think we had a great discussion, I'm excited to hit all this again and maybe keep it a little more to the point, which is probably mostly on me, as people that listen will tend to know that I will just go off sometimes. I'm going to try and back off and give you the floor here. I want to start because of where you're at as a Sixers fan, but working for NBC Sports Boston, covering the Celtics on a good amount of Al Horford discussion. I want to know what you think about the struggles he's had this season and whether you think that they're more about, you know, his regression as a guy going into his mid-30s, or if you think it's more about the fit, whether that fit is a poor fit in Philadelphia or if the fit was just that good with the Celtics.
I think it's, you know, there's of course just a little bit of regression. There was a little bit of that last year too that was similar, but it's the fit is the major thing. And I mean, it's a bad fit with the Sixers because, you know, everywhere Al's gone, he's been a winner. His team has been in the playoffs. They've improved from where they were before he got there. You know, this is only his third stop, but his previous two stops in the NBA, he went to the Hawks. You know, they were a lottery team. Then they just started making the playoffs every year. He leaves and they're back in the lottery. I mean, it's not all about him, obviously, but, you know, and then, you know, he comes to the Celtics, helps take them that next step to being a real contender, signing with the Celtics franchise. And then, you know, going to Philly was, you know, at the time when they signed him as a Sixers fan, I was happy about it, you know, mainly just because he's such a good, you know, Joel defender. And I think the main reason is he just doesn't foul a lot. I think a lot of times Joe's having a bad game or a tough matchup, he just gets in the low post and tries to get to the line, and that's incredibly effective. But Al is just so smart that he just would hold his hands up and just say, what are you going to do, and not get the foul calls. And I think that was one of the ways he was really effective. So as a Sixers fan, it was like, great. Not only have you taken him from a potential playoff opponent, but you've taken him from every opponent. He's on your team. And, you know, I was interested to see what they were going to do, and I drank the Kool-Aid and was all in on the signing. And then you just look back and you're like, geez, what were they thinking? I mean, they spent a ton of money on a player who basically should be a bench player. I mean, he may start just for, you know, the little tally on his basketball reference page just to say that he started, but he really shouldn't be on the court with Joel if they're going to be effective. I mean, we'll see what happens in the playoffs, but it's for sure the fit. His value is what he can do as a center, and he's not playing center when Joel's out there. And Joel is the best player on the team. He's one of the most dominant players in the entire NBA. So you're not going to bench him for Al Horford. So it doesn't really make sense. But, you know, I'm not going to be too critical of the front office because I was all for it over the summer. I mean, I'm actually going to be pretty critical. They were terrible. I can't believe they did it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the limbo we're all stuck in. I think a lot of people bought into it, myself included. Again, to your point, even just for the sake that he's not on the Celtics anymore, just felt like such a relief because we just kept running into that buzzsaw and we didn't know what the answer was. And it was so hard to put that aside and say, okay, yeah, but can he play with your best player? Did you really just give like 4 years, $110 million or whatever it was to a guy to back up Joel Embiid? We all saw the Toronto series and how Embiid off the court was just the nightmare scenario, and it haunted us seeing the corpses of Amir Johnson and Boban and Greg Monroe out there. But, you know, we wanted that position solidified, but not necessarily with all of your cap space. And I think we had a lot of delusions of grandeur about these two playing together that fell apart pretty quick. So it's been a tough pill to swallow, but like you said, it's so hard to be critical in hindsight, because I think a lot of us, whether we just hadn't, you know, needed to believe in it or whether we truly did, either way, I think a lot of people were pretty about it at the time. I wanted to ask you, because there was a report that came out from Kyle Newbeck of NBC Sports Philly during this season that he had spoken to people in and around Boston that were saying that Al Horford typically kind of drops out of games and has lulls in the middle of the season that maybe wasn't really talked about as much about, and people talk about him being this, like, this perfect kind of role player, does all the little things, and he does have impressive numbers, but it seemed like there were kind of whispers about whether he shows up all the time. Were these things that you heard as well, whether that be before or after he was with Boston, or during or after he was with Boston, I should say?
You know, it wasn't talked about a lot, but it was definitely something that happened. I mean, he's always had injuries, at least with his time with the Celtics. He was, you know, little things here and there, nothing major. But he would miss, you know, 10 to 15 games, I think, every season there, and just kind of spread out. But yeah, there was always, Celtics fans were, they didn't warm up to him immediately, you know, because they saw that big contract and they expect, you know, 20 and 10, because they just don't understand that, you know, it's the market that decides the contract, and, you know, that's what the cost of getting him from the Hawks, or else he would have just stayed there or gone to the Thunder. That's what they had to pay to get him. And it's not like you're paying for 20 and 10. You're paying for the impact on winning. And he impacted winning. And he does a lot of the little things, like you said, that don't necessarily show up in the box score. But, you know, the teams are always better with him on the court, especially defensively. But there were, for sure, especially last season, you know, just like you forget he was even there sometimes. And it's not like he was playing bad. It was just like, you know, just not playing as, like, wasn't doing anything to counteract the awful negativity of Kyrie Irving. You know, we think of Al Horford as this great leader, and I think that is just because he's a really nice guy and his teammates like him, his coaches love him, he's great on the court. But, you know, he's not a big rah-rah locker room guy. He's just nice. And it's just never been who he is to, like, just get up and, you know, curse out his teammates or to, you know, kind of, you know, be an alpha in a locker room with other all-stars. And, you know, Kyrie Irving was just verbally destroying the team, you know, just by opening his mouth after games and just, like, saying some just ridiculous things. And, like, they were unnecessary. And it would have been great if Al had just gone to him and be like, you know, you can just not answer questions you don't want to answer. You know, but that's just not Al. And there were, you know, there were some people that were just not during the season, but after the season, that were kind of just like, you know, where was Al last year when the Celtics season was just going up in flames? Like, he was fine when he was on the court. He wasn't bad. He wasn't winning them games necessarily, but he didn't kind of live up to his reputation. And look, I don't want to blame him for that, because it's not like it was, you know, his reputation shouldn't have been what it was. It really just shouldn't have. It's just, I think the more you look at it, it's like we kind of attach that narrative to him that he's this great leader. And he leads by example because he just does what he's told, and he's smart, and he can help run a defense for a basketball team and do what the coaches say and be a good example for young players. But it's not like he's going to, you know, push guys into a locker and say, listen, you need to get your ass together, you know, get your act together. But, you know, there was a little bit of that talk after he left.
Yeah, we found that out the hard way in Philadelphia, because I think that also was part of the allure of bringing him here, is I think that the organization and the fans thought that he was going to be a veteran presence in this locker room that was needed, that we didn't necessarily felt that we got from J.J. Redick, who, again, I don't think that burden was necessarily all on him, nor should he have been expected to be able to be that sole guy, especially the years he was here with how young everybody was. But Horford, you never really heard much about what he brought to this locker room while he was here. And when things got bad, he was just kind of toeing the line. His answers were pretty out there. And I think people were looking to him to be a guy to kind of, you know, rally this team and rally Joel and make Joel the best player he could be. And I don't really think we got much of that from him this season. Like you said, maybe that's not fair to him. It probably isn't, but for some reason or another, this is just what has kind of been put onto him from all the places he's gone and the success that he's had. So fair or not, that was the expectation, and he didn't live up to it at all so far.
And he also didn't need to, you know, have those critical comments. I thought when he said, when he was complaining about his role and stuff like that, that was a little out of character for Al. I've just, you know, like I said, he's just a super nice guy. Kind of just, you know, gives you your cliche that you get in the locker room after games and stuff like that. You know, he would be critical of himself and things like that, and very vague if he was kind of trying to sort of, you know, actually he wouldn't even really like be like passive aggressive. Even he was pretty good at just not being negative about his teammates at all. And so I was a little surprised when he was complaining about his role, because I mean, man, what did you think when you signed that contract? I mean, you signed the contract.
Exactly.
So it's not, that's what you signed up for. It's like month three of your new career or your new team. So maybe just keep your mouth shut and do that kind of talking behind the scenes. Cause in the media, it just seemed really out of character. But again, I think maybe we just have the wrong read on him. And look, again, I really like him. He's a great person. He's super nice and a great basketball player. But he's just in a bad situation.
Yeah, and like we've said, you based on everything we've seen, heard, the trouble that they had with him, you get why the Sixers organization and the ownership and Elton Brand especially like wanted to throw that money at him. And you know, a guy's going to take the money, you know, provide for himself, his family. You get that. There's an understanding in that. But if then you're going to complain about what's going on with you, I mean, you do have some responsibility of what you signed up for. You especially a guy that smart, like had to know what this team was and how that was going to work and know his game and things like that. And then to come in and have issues with it, it does seem a little bit out of character and a little questionable, as you'd think that somebody like him would be aware of what he was getting into. Maybe not necessarily to the degree that it ended up being, but at least some idea that this wasn't going to be, you know, a fairy tale fit or anything like that.
And I mean, maybe there's something specifically that he was referencing that we just don't know.
Right.
Like maybe he was talking about, you know, some kind of coaching decisions that were really irking him, or maybe there was a player on the team that was just, you know, not doing what they were supposed to, and that was his way of kind of putting that out there. So, you know, I don't want to crush him for that, because, again, it's like the first time I've ever heard him really be disgruntled.
Right.
So, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll write a book about it in a couple of years.
God, I've read enough Sixers books already this year for a few years, I think, so I hope they don't. Regarding Horford and the Celtics specifically, since I want to try to move into a potential first-round matchup between the Sixers and the Celtics, do you think that, albeit the complications the Sixers have had with Horford as far as fit and as far as his play so far, do you think that there's an advantage that they may have in having him specifically against the Celtics, having been there, knowing a lot of the personnel? It's not the same team that the Sixers have seen, obviously, with Horford not being there, but for the most part, the pieces are the same, and now they have him in their locker room. It kind of showed during the regular season. They went 3-1 against them. Historically, to this point, they had struggled with them in the current era of each of these teams. Or do you think that might be a little bit overstated and overplayed, especially come the playoffs?
You know, I think it'll help a little bit for sure. You know, that familiarity, you know, just because what he brings to the table is just, you know, defensive recognition, calling out plays or calling out the opponent's plays. And, you know, he'll have a better idea. I think maybe he can help in, you know, in film prep and stuff like that. And like, all right, just, you know, when I was there, you know, Marcus Smart, you know, he loves to do this, or, you know, Jaylen Brown is really, you know, deadly when he's here, and maybe things like that. But I think Brad Stevens is too good of a coach to run some things that will be easily diagnosed by Al. You know, Brad will think about that, and he'll run some crazy stuff that no one's seen before. He'll put some lineups out there that he didn't even during the regular season, just to kind of throw the other coach off sometimes. But I think that it might help a little bit, but over a 7-game series, you know, I don't know how impactful it'll be.
Yeah, I don't like to typically give Brad Stevens credit, but in the interest of trying to be fair and reasonable, like, I agree that he's a very good coach, especially come the playoffs, and seems like the kind of thing that would be an interesting kind of back and forth to see what Horford can diagnose and if Stevens could specifically maybe play into Horford trying to maybe read too much and even maybe punish them for that kind of thing. It seems like the type of thing, like you said, over seven games especially, that, you know, there's a lot of adjustments, a lot of changes made, and at some point it's not necessarily you're kind of just playing into that series, and the history kind of goes out the window, I think, after, you know, the first or second game.
100%, yeah.
As far as the Celtics, like, their matchup with Embiid, because I think all the other matchups are very, like, I guess, interchangeable to some degree. But Joel Embiid, as far as the primary five for the Celtics, like, their main five players are all very small. They don't have a center that fits in that five, because you figure Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward fit in with Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kemba Walker. Do you think Daniel Tice got the most minutes at center, the most starts? Do you think that he would be an answer? Enes Kanter historically has kind of hung in there with Embiid sometimes, although it seems like his role throughout the season kind of came and went with the Celtics. Do you think that they kind of have to throw both of them at them? Do you think Daniel Tice is up for it? How do you see that working out in regards to how the Celtics deal with Embiid?
Yeah, I think it would probably be Kanter. Tice has been great, but Brad has a short leash with him. There's certain matchups that Tice just doesn't play well, and you'll see, like, we'll see him make like two mistakes in the first quarter and just, you know, good night. And we'll see him maybe later in the game, but, you know, and we'll be like, if Tice hurt or something, you know, just nope. He just, the matchup was bad, and Brad is quick to react like that. And Kanter, I think I agree with you. He played pretty well versus Embiid in their December game, but Embiid scored 38 points and carried the Sixers to a win. So it was like, it wasn't well enough. But I do remember specifically seeing just being like, Kanter's actually like really, really putting up resistance, just Embiid still scoring. So it kind of like, it doesn't really matter if you're playing well and the other opponent is still playing better. That's trouble. I mean, that's trouble for any team that plays the Sixers, is the Embiid matchup. So that is something that I know, that's why a lot of people think that it's not a terrible assignment for the Sixers if they get the Celtics, even though they would be the sixth and the Celtics would be the three. And I mean, who knows where the playoffs are going to be. Will the Sixers feel like they're on the road if they're on the road for all of the games? Will the technical home court games feel like home court? I mean, that's one of the weirdest things with the Sixers, just the home road split. And if all of the games are on the road, in theory, if they play like they do on the road during the regular season, they'll get swept, right? I mean,
yeah.
Who knows? But I do think that Kanter would probably be the guy. Tice is, you know, plays really well. I mean, really well, especially for that contract. He's one of Ainge's better signings. Ainge seems to always find one of these, either like a foreign guy or just kind of like a role player, and throw him in a much higher usage role than they're used to, and they end up playing really well. I mean, part of that's Brad, part of that's Danny, part of that's just the other teammates around them. But I just don't know, like, when people talk about the Celtics being a bad matchup for the Sixers because of Embiid, I'm like, well, who could they have on there? Like, what center could they have other than Al Horford that would be great, that was, like, a realistic option for them? So I think it's just going to be Kanter until he gets into foul trouble. I mean, Robert Williams was supposed to have a growth year this year, because a lot of the things that he needs to really get better at are just game recognition stuff that you just can't get when you're not playing. So he's not playing now, and he wasn't playing because he had a hip injury during the season. So that was a real unfortunate thing. But I think Embiid would just eat him for breakfast, just because Robert Williams jumps at every pump fake, and Embiid pump fakes a lot. So you'll see him diving, jumping to the half court because Embiid's going to pump fake at the 3-point line. So I think Grant Williams is probably just a little too small. That's one thing that he really he's just going to need to get better at shooting, because his size is a problem, I think, in the NBA. So that's basically it. I don't know what else they could do. And it's a problem for sure.
Yeah, Kanter is interesting because, like, he's known for not being a great defender nor all that interested. But the read I kind of get on him, and why I think it, for some reason, it works against Embiid to some degree, like you said, Embiid still gets his, but we both kind of agree that we feel like we've seen Kanter, match up okay with him. One, I don't think Enes Kanter has, like, any pride or shame. Like, I don't think he cares what Embiid does to him. Like, he's going to still be there. He's kind of got like a little troll to him, kind of like Embiid does. So he can deal with Embiid's crap and still hang in there. And the other thing is, like, the one thing I will give Enes Kanter a ton of credit for that I don't know if people talk about it enough is he's a tremendous offensive rebounder in a time where, like, no one really seems to be that interested in that anymore. Like, that's the one thing I feel like anytime the Sixers have played against him, wherever he's been, that he absolutely dominates the offensive glass. And that's even when Joel Embiid is out there, which is, like, a little troubling to me, that Kanter really seems to attack the offensive glass a ton.
Yeah, you're right. That's so true about he's a great offensive rebounder. He's a great defensive rebounder, too. He's just like a really solid rebounder, and there's something to be said for that. His defense has been much better this year. I think it's just the system kind of puts him in position to, you know, and also he won't play. Like, Brad is like, you know, they don't have a ton of options this year, but he will just find ways to not play you if you're not going to give effort on defense. And Kanter has, you know, talked about it, you know, from the very beginning when they signed him. He's like, I'm going to be a good defender, blah, blah. I know I've got that reputation. And you're so right about the just not letting Joel win the mental game either, because he's always talked trash to Joel, always. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care if he gets dunked on, anything like that. He's a very interesting guy. He's fun to have on the team. He's always willing to talk. We have a podcast with him at NBC Sports Boston, which is nice and always entertaining. He'll FaceTime Taco Fall. Well, I said, oh, I should mention Taco, right? Nah, he's not going to be on the playoff roster. But, so I think Kanter would be the best potential matchup there. But it's, you know, like I said, I'm not sure who would be a great matchup for Joel.
Yeah, definitely. I want to ask you one other thing about Kanter, but I want to get to it toward the end, especially now that it seems like you may be familiar. I'm excited for this, because I wasn't sure I was going to ask you. But I want to stick to the basketball part for now. We kind of just hit on a lot of it, so maybe this doesn't need, you know, tremendous breakdown, but if you have anything, obviously feel free. So based on everything we just said and anything else, like, what do you think is more likely to happen in a series between the Sixers and the Celtics? Do the Sixers force the Celtics to play big, or can the Celtics force the Sixers to go small by, you know, putting out their kind of, like, quote-unquote death lineup where, you know, you run small with Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward in there?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's just hard with Embiid to be that small. I think because, like, who – If you don't have a big, like, who guards Embiid? You, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum. I mean, I think they're going to have a big out there. I think if they play Joel and Al, they won't care. They'll just have Tatum at the four, or Hayward, I guess. But and Al will try to probably take advantage of that. But I think that you know, it's interesting. That's always the game. Like, you know, the teams that go small, like, oh, it's such an advantage on offense. Like, who's really dictating it? I think they'll start a center for sure, and, you know, just see how it goes. They'll maybe try to not have a center out there, but Embiid is so good down low. I mean, he'll just score every time or get fouled. Marcus Smart is a stretch six, is what he calls himself, which is hilarious, and is very good guarding centers, but, like, twice a game. We're not talking about, like, the matchup of the game is Marcus Smart at center. Like, that's not a thing.
Yeah, he can surprise you and, like, you know, force a turnover and you're like, oh my God, he did that against a center, but you're not going to do that on 50 possessions.
Right. It's great when, you know, there's a switch and the center thinks he's got a mismatch and starts backing Marcus down and it's like, wait, this guy's not moving really like he's supposed to for someone his size. And then, oh, there's the ball leaving my hand because he just stole it. He's a fun guy. It's like, it's different than Matisse. Matisse has got, like, some weird, like, 18th sense where he can just steal the ball no matter what. Mm-hmm. Has just such an incredible ability to steal the ball. Marcus isn't like that, but he's all over the place. He's more of like a kind of just get in the way and just makes everything difficult for you. And doesn't even show up in the box score. It will be fun to see those two on the same team, Matisse and Marcus Smart.
Oh, for sure. I think, like, Marcus Smart's one of those guys that the more, I mean, maybe I can't speak for all Sixers fans, but I know for myself, and I think a lot of people have come around that the first couple years we've had to see him, we were like, okay, like, this guy only seems to do it against us. He's really not that good. Like, I really hate this guy. And then you realize he is actually that good, and man, like, he's one of those guys that when he's not on your team, you hate him, but boy, do you want him on your team. Like, really, really want him on your team. And especially because, like, this season especially, he at least has – he's become a good enough shooter to not play himself off the floor.
Right. And I always said since his rookie year, I mean, like, he's going to get shots. He's going to get threes. He's going to get better at shooting because he's going to be allowed to shoot them because he's just so good. He's got an anchor skill that keeps him on the floor. His defense is so good, so crucial, so important that the coaches will allow him to do those other things to keep getting better and better. And it paid off. It was a great example of why you shouldn't write people off early, especially if they're guards and it's shooting. And it's like, you know, because he must be a good practice shooter because he shot terribly his first couple of years, but he still had the green light. And I don't think Brad Stevens has a red light, to be honest. I think that they've always just been like, look, if you're open and it's a good shot, shoot it. Because all his bigs will shoot threes if they're open. But Marcus is a guy that he's just an absolute game changer. And he is, you're right. He's the kind of guy that, yeah, other teams hate him so much. And I did actually ask him this year that classic picture of him pushing when he pushed Embiid last season.
Mm-hmm. And he got, the technical.
And got kicked out of the game. My friend Mitch Leff is actually the Getty photographer who took that picture of him. So shout out to Mitch. But I asked Marcus specifically about that look. I'm like, that's a psycho look. What were you thinking? And he explained to me that he was, because I guess leading up to it, Embiid like flopped. Or Embiid was flopping in the moment that he pushed him because Marcus said he barely touched him and Embiid like
it was an obvious
forward.
Flop.
And so Marcus's face is like, come on, Joe. Like, that's literally what he told me. Like, I was just like, come on, Joe. And it made sense because, man, I remember when I first saw them, like, that look on his face is like, it's terrifying. Yeah. You know, he just like that, I don't care, I'm just going to push you for the look. But I tell you, man, it's going to be a fun series if these two teams do meet because there's just so much history with the franchises that, you know, most of the fans, or at least the younger fans, don't really care about the 80s. But, you know, if they meet again, it'll be the third time since 2010, right? So that's how rivalries are made. You play in the playoffs.
Yep. All right, I don't know much left. I do want to ask you about Kemba Walker because I think it's been an interesting season for him, and specifically in the matchups with the Sixers. Because when he was in Charlotte, like, he was a Sixers killer, and as a fan, I'm sure you know, like, it felt like every game he was scoring, you know, 50, 60, what have you. And in Boston, he didn't really have that kind of success. I mean, he put up 12, then 29 and 26. So those are about average, but he never killed them. And then he went 0-3. The only game that the Sixers lost against Boston, he wasn't even active for. And in the three games that they lost, he was a minus 16, a plus 2, and a minus 20. So as far as, like, just Kemba versus the Sixers, do you think that it's more, you know, his role in Boston rather than what he was able to do in Charlotte where it was just him? Or, you know, do you think that, you know, I think a lot of Celtics fans are happier having Kemba than Kyrie. You can speak to that too, but Kyrie had a lot more success against the Sixers, it seemed. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I mean, Kyrie was like, he's like a disruptive offensive player. But he can carry teams, like, for sure, and has a crucial score whenever he needs to in the playoffs ability. But he kind of screwed up team offense. Like, it really wasn't, just look at all the teams he's been on. They end up playing better with him when he's or play better when he's out, which is crazy because he's undeniably incredible at basketball. Mm-hmm. But Kemba is more fits much easier into that team mode, so it is a role thing. Like, he was just on a garbage Charlotte team, just putting up a ton of shots, playing more of like an Allen Iverson role where he's just shooting, you know, volume shooter. But I think the main thing with the Sixers matchup is Ben Simmons. You know, I'd have to go back and look, but, like, Ben is huge, he's massive, and Kemba's small. And the Sixers' length is gonna affect a guy like Kemba more than anybody on the Celtics. Because that's, you know, and he didn't get a lot of calls early on. I remember being like, man, this guy's been the All-Star several times. Like, he needs to be getting more calls.
You're talking about Kemba.
But Kemba, yeah.
Okay.
So I think that I think the length is really an issue with the Sixers, because his role has been, you know, he was early on, like the first quarter of the season, Kemba would struggle early in games and then just carry the team like to wins in the second half. Like, really, like shades of Isaiah Thomas a couple years ago, King of the Fourth stuff, where he's just like, all right, Kemba's shooting bad in the first quarter, I can't wait till the second half, because we could just pencil him in for, you know, 12 points in the fourth quarter. And he helped them win games. And then part of what happened for the rest of the season was that he got hurt. And also, this gentleman that we haven't mentioned yet, Jason Tatum, has completely just popped off, taking a stride that, you know, he'd already taken a mini leap coming into the season. You know, started, oh, he's averaging like 18, 19, 20 points. This is great. Then it's like, oh, no, he's averaging almost 30 points. This is incredible. And Kemba has been like the perfect, like, it wouldn't happen with Kyrie here. Kemba has been completely fine with it. He doesn't care. He wants to win. You know, he's proved that he can, you know, score 25 points a game in the NBA for 5 years. So he's just going to be okay with being on a winning team and letting this incredibly talented young player just blossom into a superstar right in front of his eyes. And partly too, because he was hurt. And while he was hurt, Tatum started taking the sleep. So when he comes back, he's just like, all right, your team now, buddy.
Yeah, Kemba, obviously the character thing in and of itself, even before we talk about anything with the basketball court and the game itself, is such a huge jump up from what you guys dealt with Kyrie Irving. And we saw that continued to happen in Boston, where it seemed like he just kind of quit on that team. And like you said, they actually played better without him, which, especially considering the drop off in talent there, with him out and then also not having Durant this season, was like actually pretty wild to see that even that Nets team was better without him. It'll be interesting to see how they figure that out going forward. You touched on two things in there that I was going to skip over, but I'll try to hit them really quick. So you mentioned Ben Simmons and the difference that he made this season in the Sixers-Celtics matchup. Before it, the Celtics really seemed to have his number, and he really, really struggled against them. What do you think changed this season? And I was basically going to ask you specifically, like, what would be the Celtics game plan for him? Because it seemed like in the past, before this season, and I think a lot of this maybe has to do with Al Horford, or maybe you'll agree, was that, you know, they would just wall him off. They would basically have two guys joint at the free throw line to keep him from penetrating, and he didn't know what to do. He would get there, and he would dribble it off his feet. He would turn it over. He would, you know, jump in the air before he even knew where the ball was going, and the Celtics would just, you know, route him and force turnovers and completely shut down their offense. That did not seem to be the case this season. So, you know, what do you attribute that to, and what could they do to maybe try to answer him, or is there something they can do?
Yeah, you know, I don't know, because, I mean, that first game was the first game of the season, brand new team for the Celtics, a lot of turnover, brand new team for the Sixers too, but, you know, Ben was so aggressive that first game, and just maybe he was just like, I don't even want to give him a chance to wall me off. But I don't think they're going to do much different in the playoffs, because until he shoots an open three, they're just not going to cover him out on the perimeter. You know, that they've, you know, they'll hack a Ben too if he's not hitting his free throws. You know, I think Brad Stevens may have been the first one to do that to Ben, if I'm not mistaken, where he started fouling, you know, like at the 5 minute mark of the fourth quarter, you know, intentionally fouling him to put him on the line. And I think Ben actually ended up hitting some, but, you know, just get him thinking. That's where, you know, the coaching matchup's really going to come in, because, you know, Ben is, you know, his impact has been, I think, incredible on defense. And, you know, he's such a special offensive player. I know I get trapped in the, you know, shoot a three coward stuff, just like everyone does, because it really is like, ugh, it's just like, why don't you shoot threes? I mean, come on. Everyone wants to. Your coach wants to. It's crazy to me. But leaving that to the side, I mean, everything else he does is incredibly special. He is so good at basketball. He is a transcendent talent. He is, you know, like putting up Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson type numbers in the first couple of years of their career. It's crazy to say that, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at the numbers.
And that's why it's so frustrating.
That said, I think the shooting is going to be an issue. It's just compounded by the roster around him too. But I think what the Sixers will probably try to do is just try to keep, you know, running. And the Celtics, I don't know how they're going to approach that, but I think they'll probably just try the same things. I can't really remember what they did in the matchups earlier this season, but I don't think that they're going to have as much success because Al, again, was a really good Al was a really big piece of that defensive scheme against Ben Simmons, and I think people kind of forget about that too. So I think I don't think the Celtics will have as much success walling him off this year.
No, I don't either. Sometimes the obvious answer is the answer, and I think Al Horford definitely had a lot to do with that. Whether you know he was part of keeping Ben from penetrating, or whether he was baiting him in the mistakes, I think that had a lot to do with it. And while we expected Horford to really guide Joel a lot, I think that maybe you saw some of that go to Simmons as well, especially since Horford kind of plays more like Ben. Like he kind of has some of that point forward in him that maybe he was actually more beneficial to Ben than we had imagined, and maybe less beneficial to Embiid than we had hoped, which, something's better than nothing, I guess.
Take what you can.
Yeah, exactly. The last thing, so I got to go back to Enes Kanter here, and I don't know if you'll have anything on this or not, but so we're the Sixers and Beer podcast, but our network also has a pro wrestling one called Power Bombs and Potables. And I don't know how long this has really been out, but I just heard it this week and I've heard a couple people talking about it. And I wanted to ask you, apparently Enes Kanter wants to be a professional wrestler after his NBA career is done and allegedly already has had talks with Vince McMahon and WWE. And I was just wondering if this is something that is talked about in Boston and whether it's like just, yep, that's Enes. Like, you're not surprised based on his personality, because to me it's not that surprising. Or if this is the kind of thing that people are like, well, yeah, like this explains why this guy, maybe isn't the potential player he is, and he's just kind of out there, and are people like maybe wishing he just would go on and start that already? Is this anything that you've heard of or anything?
Yeah, no, he talked about it on the Enes Kanter show. Enes Kanter podcast on the NBC Sports Boston podcast network. Earlier in the season, he talked about loving wrestling, just loving doing it. I forget the story that he did or that he told leading up to, how he got involved in it. But I think it was when he was with the Thunder was the first time he did any of that wrestling. And then I think he did one over the summer. But yeah, he for sure talked about it. And look, anywhere you go, there's, wrestling fans. In any city, so there's plenty in Boston that are all about it, that like it. It's fun, it's character. We just watched The Last Dance. Dennis Rodman was into it too. So there's something about these big men that are good rebounders that love WWE.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, Kanter just has that personality. Like he has that little bit of troll in him. The same thing with Joel Embiid. Like they definitely feel like the types that could go on and do it. Rob Gronkowski recently did it. He had his spot at WrestleMania and was supposed to be under contract there until, now he's down with Brady and the Bucks and stuff like that. But that's not really any of my concern. So, Max, I want to thank you. This was awesome. It was very insightful. I enjoyed this. I got to ask you to wrap this up, though. So, despite the Celtics being 1-3 against the Sixers this season, they're the 3 seed, Sixers are the 6 seed. I think the Celtics are going to go in as at least a decent favorite. What would your prediction be in a 7-game series if this is what we end up with between the Sixers and the Celtics in the first round?
I think the Celtics will win. I really do. And part of that is, I told you when we were leading up to this, that I'm a negative Sixers fan. It's less like brain, more heart. That I think just, I'm just expecting disappointment from the Sixers, but, it's a win-win for me because whoever wins, I'll be happy. But at the end of the day, I really do think coaching matters in a 7-game series. I know that the, cause I don't think there's like that much of an edge talent wise either way. And I just think that who would you pick? I know that you said that, you don't want to give Brad too much credit, but Brad or Brett. It's like, come on, what are we doing? Here?
I think I'll tell you that too. And I've been a staunch Brett Brown guy for a long time, but
right. And it's like, it's hard to imagine them, especially in these circumstances, figuring it out. But it really could be one of those things where the break is what the Sixers needed to kind of just get their heads on, and they can come back and have a fresh attitude. And who knows how other teams are going to be. It's going to be a weird finish to the season, you know, knock on wood that we get one. But I think anything's possible. But if you were asking me to put money on it, I would say Celtics, because, you know, one, the road struggles for Philly are just, you know, it's insane. I mean, they're like one of the best teams ever at home and one of the worst on the road. Just the fit stuff, and just I think Brad is a good schemer for a playoff series. He's, you know, the game one, the game two, the game three, the game four kind of, you know, adjustments when it's kind of an even talent wise matchup, even though Embiid is, you know, will be the best player on the court, I think by far, at least until Tatum can, you know, prove that he's the player he's been the last couple months. And who knows if that continues. Like, it really is one of those, you know, is Ben Simmons going to be healthy? If he's back, it really does change a lot. And I think he will be. But again, I think it changes a lot versus teams other than the Celtics. I think for some reason, I just think the Celtics have a good, even though it didn't play out that way during the regular season, I just still would pick the Celtics over the Sixers, as much as it would hurt, but it also wouldn't. You know, I can't say that I don't root, because people say, well, who are you rooting for? No, I don't really. Like, I'm rooting for an exciting game, an exciting series. And, you know, in this situation, I'll be sad no matter what, and I'll be happy no matter what. So, like, have a good one.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, Max, I really appreciate you coming on. Again, Max is from NBC Sports Boston. You can follow him on Twitter at Max_Lederman, LEDERMAN. Max, thank you. I really, really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate you asking me.
Yep, not a problem. All right, that's going to do it for us, everybody. Cheers, and trust the podcast.